Good evening, Vancouver. Welcome back to Canucks After Dark, Monday, December 18th, our final episode before Christmas, which I'm now realizing is on a Monday, so we'll probably not have an episode next week. But hello, everyone. A big week for the Vancouver Canucks, going 3-0-1, better than both of our predictions, and have now picked up in their last six games 11 points, 5-0-1. Over the last six, they haven't lost in regulation in about 2 weeks. And how about the Seattle Seahawks on Monday Night Football getting it done? So just a very, very good week for me. How about yourself, Clay?
Well, you're in a very good mood, Parker. That's all, not that you aren't usually. That is awesome. Yeah, last week when we did our show, the Canucks had just won two in a row for the first time in a month. And we're like, okay, they should be able to continue this, but who knows, road trip. And yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. They took three of the next four since our last show, and that's why they've won five of their last six. So I'm in a good mood. I finished my exam. So just kind of relaxing for the next 2 weeks before I start my next course. Doing some Canucks games, watching them, post games, whatever, with you. Life is good, brother. Life is good.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, it's such a weird thing to look back on, right? Yeah, they had just won. They had just played the Hurricanes and the Wild last time we chatted, and that was their first back-to-back wins. And now you look at it, and it's going to be 2 weeks since they've lost in regulation as of tomorrow, right? Like, how quickly things change in a week where, they're going on the road. Well, they have the two games at home against the Wild and the Panthers, the Lightning and the Panthers. And then to go on the road and, you know, kind of a weird scenario of having these two early afternoon games against two teams that they should beat, although the Wild have been looking better lately. And to go out of that and just go up, pick up 3 points and in kind of not very pretty ways, like just sort of grinding out wins in a way where you wouldn't be surprised if they had lost based on the way they played both of those games, but they get the points and they keep getting the points because this team is now second in the NHL in points. Like fifth in points percentage, maybe sixth. I don't remember.
Fifth sounds right. Yeah.
In points percentage in the entire NHL, first in goal differential in the entire NHL. I mean, yeah, what a time. What a time to be a Canucks fan.
Yeah. And these are games, and I know we're going to go in order as we always do, Parker, but yeah, these are games that I think in previous years, the Minnesota Chicago ones, you're getting one out of 4 points or maybe two, not three out of them. And yeah. And I know we're going to talk about this, but it can't be understated that that was weird. They're playing 8 hours earlier than they're used to. And you simply don't turn your body around that quickly.
Yeah. It's a weird one. And I know we talked about it, especially on Game Over after Saturday's game. Yes. Where we were all together at, 2 PM essentially. Yeah. It is a weird, why didn't they go back to Demko? Why'd they put DeSmith in for that game? Not that DeSmith was bad, but I mean, it was a short rest, right? 7 hours or 8 hours, I guess in that case, for NHL goalie, right? That's some good rest time, that he was missing out. So we'll do our normal breakdown. This time we got four games. But we are so good lately at just nailing everything on time. And then we do have three more to preview, their last two games on the road here before Christmas against the Predators and the Stars. Then they have the Sharks, on the 23rd back at home for the holidays. Very good week for the Canucks starting on Tuesday. This was the fourth game of their homestand in which they were already, doing quite well, and they were 2-1 going into this game. So they get the Tampa Bay Lightning in a game where, if I remember correctly, they got absolutely dominated in the first period. They absolutely dominated the second period. And then they hung on for dear life, as they have done so well all season. I mean, they're the best team in the league at hanging on to leads, which is, again, we're so used to blown leads. But it was a very... it was a game for the PDO gods to help us out a little bit, as they have been all season.
It's almost it's funny, Parker. It's a given that the first period we're going to get a shot double digits to single digits. Yep. And then basically you can reverse the numbers for the second period usually, right? And then who knows what happens in the third. That's kind of the pattern of the Canucks games now.
Yeah, and then whichever team's losing in the third period gets all the shots.
There you go.
Seemingly. this one starts pretty ugly for the Canucks. This was that one where just a complete broken play defensively. Myers and Zadorov are on the ice for the Canucks on the D side. and Tampa Bay comes in on the zone entry, it kind of turns into a 4-on-2.
Yeah.
And they just get like a very nice cross-ice pass from Hagel to Sergachev on the far side. And Elias Pettersson gets this close to breaking it up. And then Sergachev has Braden Point just going to the back door completely untouched. And again, Tyler Myers is about this close to breaking it up, right? So two very good passes, very nice zone entry play. And Tampa Bay opens the scoring in what's a little bit of a scary start for the Canucks.
Yeah, minute 25 in. And Kucherov, the leading scorer in the league, he starts off this play and he doesn't even get an assist because I think he gives to Hagel. And then you're right. Yeah. And then Kucherov doesn't touch it. But it's such a nice passing play. I know Tampa is not up there in the standings, but their skilled guys are still so good. And that was a scary start for sure. You're saying, oh, a minute and a half in, that's not good.
Yeah, not ideal. But the Canucks, again, for getting outplayed and pretty much, you know, throughout the entire first period, they did end up with a power play. And this team has the chance, at least before the last couple of games, they have the chance to really take it to you on the power play. And I think if I remember correctly, this power play wasn't looking that great for the first like 30 seconds to a minute or so. But eventually they get set up in their umbrella formation that they like to do, right? Pettersson taking the shots from one side. And then sometimes Hronek, sometimes Kuzmenko, sometimes Besser, sometimes Miller on the left wall. And this time, essentially, Pettersson and Hughes, Pettersson's on the top, Hughes is on the left. They do a little rotation, and it ends up with Kuzmenko on the top of the left faceoff dot. And yeah, it's just a Hughes one-timer to Andre Kuzmenko, and he makes no mistake. He just beats Vasilevskiy to the near post.
Was at this game, Parker, and I saw him, and everyone on TV saw him. It's like the weight of the world was lifted off his shoulders. He kind of looked skyward. Not sure if it's a hockey god or a relative or a combination of both, but yeah, you can almost physically see the weight being lifted off his shoulders for sure.
Yeah, that was one he needed desperately. He has been. I mean, it's only his fifth of the season. Right? we talk about it. We talk about Brock Besser scores his 21st of the season in this game. Right, very much a role reversal from last year. However, yeah, he gets one on the board, and you could tell he needed it, which was big. But Canucks go to the first period tied at one, not a bad result, and they're going into the second period, which is their best period of every team in the league. So we go to the second, and this one is it's Brock Besser's first of the game, and this is just a good scramble play in front. It's a really good forecheck, and then Hronek's able to hold the line, gets a shot on, big scramble in front, and then the puck just sort of pops out to Brock Besser, who swings on the backhand, bats it in. Again, not like a great shot or anything from Brock Besser, but right place, right time. And when things are going well, they're going well.
They are. And I think the one thing, is this the one he put it off the post or no? Yeah, I think it went off the post.
No.
It didn't hit the post on the way in. Regardless, it was a good shot. And a lot of Besser's goals, you're right, are mucky muck goals. They're on the crease, backhands, forehands, tips, whatever, rebounds. We've seen a few snipes from the slot, which we were used to in his rookie year, but now, he's turning into a true goal scorer because he's scoring from all over the place, and that's awesome to see. He's kind of doing what Kuzmenko did last year.
Yeah, he just can't miss, seemingly. Yeah. Yep. So that was his 19th of the year to make it 2-1. And the Canucks kept the pressure on, right? Like I said, 14-5, the shots in the second period, and with about 3 to play. This one's all Quinn Hughes. But a little bit of a side of Brock Besser just being in the right spot, right? Hronek does a really nice play to hold the line. Besser is just essentially playing the top of the zone, like just dead center, top of the blue line. He plays it over to Quinn Hughes, and Quinn Hughes goes for his skate around the net. And Brock Besser just sort of stays up there. The entire Tampa Bay D just sort of all comes down to the hash marks or lower, which is usually very good. You can literally see if you look at the highlight, every single Tampa Bay player is below the bottom hash mark of the faceoff circle. And Brock Besser is just posted up, you know, 8 feet inside the blue line. Quinn is always going to find a guy there. And Besser just fires it far side. And again, sort of beats Vasilevskiy to that same post to make it 3-1.
Yeah, the game really slows down for good players. Obviously, Gretzky, that's the one thing about him is he take it behind the net and then everything would just freeze for him. He's so smart. I think I see that a little bit of that with Quinn Hughes, Parker, especially when he comes down that left side. We've seen him score at least twice from that dot, and then you, whether you fix a shot or you keep skating, he had all five Tembe guys mesmerized, just staring at him. And he is so smart. He's skating at a good clip, but he's so smart. And he I bet you he knows where all nine players are, right? The other nine skaters.
For sure.
And yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. No, good players definitely know where everyone is at all times, essentially, yeah. Especially when yeah. they have the puck. And I wonder if that's a bit of a side effect of Hughes' shot being so much better and him having a couple of those goals just down the left wing and picking yep. those corners. Guys have to worry about that, right?
Sure.
And so they're sort of creeping down. I'm sure Hughes looks for it. I'm sure he looks like, is that corner available? Can I hit it? but he you know, looks it off and goes around and finds Besser. And yeah, it was very good play. You know, just a smart assist. And yep. Besser, you know, right now he just can't miss.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. So 3-1, and then we know the stat now. What is it up to? 17-0, 18-0? Now when
I think now it's 18-0 as of today.
Wow. So good. So good.
Yeah. So 18-0 after leading after two periods, which again, it's just impressive. They've led after two periods in 18 out of 30 something games. Yeah. Like that's crazy. 32 games or whatever it is now. And then, yeah, the Canucks just do this thing that I hate. I hate to watch it. It works, so I'll take it. But I hate that they're like, all right, we've got a 2-goal lead. Let's just sit back in our own zone and let Thatcher Demko make a bunch of saves from the outside and shut everything down. Because really, like, a little mistake in the other team scoring, right? But they aren't making those mistakes. The structure's working really well, and they essentially just fight off the Tampa Bay Lightning for 18 and a half minutes in the third period, and it culminates in Brock Besser sailing the puck over an empty net.
Yes, that was quite impressive.
And then the best part of this was because Hoglander plays it up to him. Besser then misses from center. Hoglander retrieves the puck in the corner, and he has Brock Besser wide open high slot, right? Get it to him, and he's scoring no matter what. And Hoglander just turns and fires, misses the net, so now the puck's coming the other way. And well, Hoglander say, well, I already gave it to you once. I think Shorty's the one that said it on the broadcast. That's good. And then, yeah, so now the Canucks do get it back. Besser then doesn't miss from just inside the center line with about 1:18 to go. To complete the natural hat trick, 21st of the year, and make it 4-1.
You ever been at a game where there's been a hat trick scored?
Yes, Brock against Pittsburgh.
Was this after we started doing our shows?
No, this was his rookie year, I think.
Okay. Oh, we met Murray, call him Lucky or whatever, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, because I just had a deja vu moment, Parker, where I thought I've asked you before. If you have, or maybe it was a hypothetical, would you throw your hat? Because I was just about Absolutely. To ask it, and I felt like saying, I felt weird, like deja vu for sure. So you throw your hat for sure?
Yeah, I don't think I was wearing a hat at that game. Right. And I usually, if it's raining, I will. So most of the time here. But yeah, I absolutely would. I don't have any hats that I really am in love with anyways.
Right, right.
And that's one of those things. It's like, yeah, you gotta do it. Especially if I were to be on the road. There was a road hat trick.
Oh yeah. Sure. You're a good fan. My seats are so cheap. And so far I couldn't even clear the third level probably.
Yeah. It's tough for the upper bowl, especially if you're on the end, there's netting.
Yeah. You know, then you're just, who cares about the netting?
Then I probably wouldn't.
I'd hit a guy in row four of the top snow.
From row four.
Yeah, exactly. Very good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would if I was in a spot to do so.
Sure.
For sure. So that's the Canucks' third straight win after shutting out the Wild and beating the Hurricanes. So they win that one 4-1. Yeah. Great start to the week, though. On Tuesday.
Awesome start. And then we get to the big game. And you and I actually got to, before we talk about the game, you and I actually got to meet. I mean, we met before. You came up to see me with your buddy, which is great. You guys, let me just pump Parker's tires. Not that he needs it, but. Obviously, he's even when I'm perfectly healthy, he's still more mobile than I am. But obviously, recovering from my very severe injury, I'm a little bit slower. And Parker took the time, even missed a bit of the game, to come up and say hi. And we were able to chat for the whole second intermission. Met some fans that been watching this show, which is pretty cool. So yeah, thank you for doing that, Parker. Hope your buddy had a good time. And
yeah, it was fun.
We were all in a good mood because of what was happening that night.
Yeah, it was. Well, that's the thing. I wasn't so concerned about getting back to my seat. Right, it was 4-0, and. By that time and yeah, vibes were high. Even in just walking around the concourse, like you could just tell everyone was in a great mood. It was sort of a perfect night.
And everyone went so early. Like, you got there early enough to get your bobblehead.
Yeah, and then I left it under my seat.
Oh no. Oh no.
And then I remember right when I walked out the door and I like did a half turn. I was like, you can't come back in. It's like, I left my body. He's like, you can't come back in.
I bet you there's probably a couple hundred people who got free bobbleheads. I mean, that didn't get one because I'm sure you weren't the only one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was just, I'm not used to bringing things with me, right? I have my jacket. That's about it. So yeah, that was a tough one, but, I'll still have my two Daniel Sedins to
you didn't get a Henrik. You got two Daniels.
No, we each got a Daniel and I just have both of them.
By the way, before we get going, Carol, thank you. Gifts, 5 CAD memberships, which is awesome. I saw who they went to, David Clifford, Spartan Hope, and JS. So thank you, Carol, for your continuous support. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, this game, it was great. I mean, we'll start on the Luongo ceremony. It was nice, you know, Corey Schneider was emceeing it basically, which was lovely. And they didn't do anything crazy. There was, you know, they like Henrik and Daniel handed him a jersey with the C on it, which was nice, a nice gesture, but they really didn't do much. They're like, hey, here's the mic, talk for 8 minutes, 10 minutes, mm-hmm, whatever, mm-hmm. And then that was it. And it was a lovely speech. It was moving. They had the, and then when the anthem came on and they showed the Team Canada 2010 win, I was like, okay, now I'm feeling it a little bit. But yeah, that was it was lovely.
Yeah, Parker, you can never please everyone all the time. That's the whole point, I guess. I was fine with it. I know a lot of people, once you even get past the whole Ring of Honor versus jersey retirement debate, once you even get past that, people were complaining that this wasn't befitting of Luongo. It wasn't. I thought it was fine because remember, this isn't a jersey retirement. The last time we saw something like this, it was the two Sedins. So of course you're gonna go for an hour. They're the best players we've ever had. And this one, yeah, you're right. 10 minutes, understated was the word for sure. But I don't know. In the arena, for me, it hit the right, it struck the right chord or whatever the term is. I thought it was fine.
And these things never translate on TV. So I'm sure people on TV were probably looking at like, oh, this looks kind of lame. but in the arena, everybody's on their feet the entire time. Right. Yeah, and everyone's like just on the edge of tears, just like reminiscing and just like thinking of the good old days. And it's just like, yeah, this is, you know, it was just nice. It was very well done. And moving. And yeah, it was perfect for what it was, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously, you know, you were there too at the Sedin one. And that was obviously a much bigger spectacle. And the Linden one I was at when I was younger too. And
nice.
Again, a much bigger spectacle. But yeah, for a Ring of Honor type of thing, it's like, yeah, you know, get it out, do the memories, do the speech. Luongo didn't even have notes in front of him. And it was great.
Impressive. And you had really good seats. Mine were okay, but I know you're a little closer. And everything was happening in your corner too.
We were essentially right behind.
That's
the
awesome. Speech,
yeah. And I mean the screen. I haven't been in the rink this year. The screen is so big.
That's right.
I can see everything.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, cool. So you thought the screen was good?
Oh, yeah, awesome. It's way better. Yeah, every watching that Dakota Joshua goal in huge format is fantastic.
Very good. Yeah, I thought it was good. A nice start to the game for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
And then, yeah, really good start to this game as Andrei Kuzmenko builds off of his goal from the previous game. And this is all Connor Garland. Connor Garland just winning a battle on the boards at the blue line, kicks it free to Kuzmenko. Goal scorer's goal, right? Comes in, has the defenseman who did like a little half, like sort of stuttered towards the puck because he saw it spring out basically right towards him, not realizing. And then, you know, he's taking that half step the wrong way and Kuzmenko notices it, pulls it away and is off to the races. Quick pull of the forehand, shot near side. Goal scorer's goal from a guy who's not scoring many goals.
Yeah. And then you're sitting there goals in two consecutive games. And yeah, I certainly turned to, I was there with my two sons and my season two partner, Mike. And I proclaim that we'll see Kuzmenko on the top line again by Christmas. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but it felt like it at that moment. Like, yeah, I felt good for him.
I did think back to that because you had mentioned it to me and maybe he's right.
We'll see. We got a few more games.
But yeah, really good goal. Nice for him to get another one back there. And Connor Garland for sort of the ebbs and flows that we've had of him over this season. You know, he's not producing, but man, has he been good the last few games. Like how I was saying, like, you always said Garland was busy, but Nils Höglander's actually busy. Well, yeah. Now Connor Garland's playing like Nils Höglander, which is the biggest compliment I can give.
That's a good point.
He's playing fantastic.
He is.
But who's playing even better is the Teddy Bluger line.
Yeah.
And they get the second goal of this one. It's Connor Garland again.
Yep.
Holds the line, plays it in deep. And then some pressure from Teddy Bluger, wins the battle, plays down in front for Joshua, and he, you know, does a little 360, tries to backhand it. Bobrovsky's there, and then he's able to get his own rebound and go shelf with it. Like Garland, Bluger, and Joshua together, just working fantastic.
Yeah, and that skill, I just noticed, Garland didn't get an assist, did he? At least not what I'm looking at.
No, only Bluger did, but Garland definitely should. I mean, Garland got in the zone and he held the line. But
yeah.
I guess on that dump in, Florida got possession before Bluger took it away.
Right.
But I mean, what a play by Teddy Bluger on that wall too. Like it was just all around. All three of them are working so hard. And Joshua, for being this big guy who's never really produced
the confidence.
Like he's coming out and he's scoring goals like out of nowhere. Which is fantastic.
By the way, thank you. 136 of you in here on a non-game night. So we know that you guys are feeling it. That's awesome. That's awesome. Just like Dakota Joshua's feeling it. Yeah, that was a very confident goal for him to go spin a Rooney backwards and then still put the puck in on his rebound, still on his backhand. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He stayed with it, right? Most guys will spin and they'll sort of drift away, but he stayed with it on his own rebound. Which was great. Shots in the first period were 15-9, but it didn't really even feel that, you know, that much of a difference. I think scoring chances were probably pretty even.
Sure.
But hey, Canucks have a 2-goal lead going into their period, the second period.
Their period,
And this is nice because this period was on my side of the rink because I was sitting basically on the end there. And I get to see one of the funniest goals I've seen in my entire life, which is Sergei Bobrovsky coming out to the bottom of the faceoff circle. Now he takes us on the backhand.
Yeah.
And then like he turns around and I don't think he sees Connor Garland because he sort of is turning this way as Garland's coming in over here. So like he never really sees him until it's almost too late. And Dakota Joshua, what a fake. Joshua makes it look like he's just gunning it at the Florida defenseman. And he hits the brakes right as Bobrovsky's going to make that pass. Like he faked him perfectly. That combined with Garland's pressure. And Bobrovsky just serves it up on a silver platter. And the best part here to me is Connor Garland's arm going up before before the puck's even off Joshua's stick. It's literally as like the puck hits Joshua's stick, Garland's arms start going up. Because he knows. He's not missing that. And I almost died laughing at that point from my seat.
Funny. So you're sitting there. That happens in your corner. I know there's so much going on. It's so fast. Maybe you're watching Garland. Maybe you're watching. Did you see Joshua coming at you, or was it only on the replay? Or did you actually? Yeah, you saw. No.
No, I'm sitting there like because it's a nothing play, right?
Yeah.
Dump in. Goalie comes out, so it's not icing, and he's gonna shoot up the wall, and something will happen at center ice, and they'll whatever. But I'm literally like watching, and I think we're just like chatting about stuff, like just hanging out. And then we watched that puck just hit Joshua's stick and we sort of like perk up. And then I immediately started like, I was like, did I miss something? Like, was there like offside and like, or the Canucks have like a delayed penalty or something? Cause this doesn't feel right, but no, it was a goal and it was hilarious.
Yeah. And then, that probably for all intents and purposes, that was the end of Florida's chances to catch up in this game for sure.
Yeah. That made it tough. Making it 3-0.
Yep.
And then the Canucks added one more. They go back to the power play. They get a little 2-man advantage on this one. And you have a Pettersson slap shot that goes right off the mask of Bobrovsky. and then Brock Besser just always in the right spot. Him and JT Miller, like they both think the exact same way, I think. Miller's so dangerous because he's skating downhill down that left wing. He can shoot. He can shoot a lot of the time. He'll shoot 60% of the time there.
Yeah.
And the rest of then 20% of the time, he's going to curl in the wall and play it back. And the rest of the time, there's someone like Brock Besser sitting behind all the defensemen. Well, there's only three guys out, I guess. Just sitting back there with the most wide open net of all time, which he puts directly into the post. But then it hits Bobrovsky's pad and is still in the crease. So Besser's able to give it a little smack to get his 22nd of the year and make it 4-0.
Yeah, perfect way to end the game. And then, of course, there's only one question left on a night where Wander Luongo is Demko going to get the shutout?
And the Canucks made it interesting, allowing 15 shots in the third period to Vancouver's one that they had. I honestly don't remember the third period from this game because it was all in my end of the ice, but just like nothing for being shots 15-1. Like the game was never in doubt. There was never like any super high danger chances coming through. So we were just kind of sitting there relaxing, like watching the game, but there was no stress, right? Normally, if this is a two goal game and they're playing like this, I'm like, man, they get one and everything's changing here. But there we were just like, I was like, man, I hope Demko can hang on. And he did, but that was really the only level of stress there was. So it was one of the most relaxing 15 shot against first or third periods that I've watched in a long time.
Yeah. And you know, I totally hear what you're saying about the mood we were in. Everyone was cheering. They were looing some of Demko's saves, which doesn't make any sense, but you're right. You look at this. I actually had to look at the shot clock. I didn't believe it was 15-1. Like I honestly can't remember the Canucks gave more than one shot. Obviously they didn't, but I don't remember a lot of really good scoring chances. It was just kind of taking home kind of thing across the finish line.
Yeah, so at 5-on-5, although all situations, out of those 15 shots, expected goals for Florida was 1.4. So they're all about average. They had them up for 8 high danger chances, which is impressive. And actually, the shot map does look pretty scary around the Canucks net. So maybe it was a little bit more dangerous than it felt. But again, I think the fact that the game wasn't in doubt and just Demko looked so poised that it was just like there wasn't really much concern.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So can you imagine in Tuesday and Thursday night, they outscored the Florida teams 8-1. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's not bad. And then I will come back to the rest of the games, but I want to touch on Edmonton, right? Edmonton goes on this 8-game heater under their new coach and are like chasing down the Canucks. And now after that Canucks little stumble there, now the Canucks have won 5 of their last 6, including an overtime or a shootout loss. And then those two Florida teams, after playing in Vancouver, they go play in Edmonton, right? Tampa Bay beats the Oilers 7-4.
Yeah.
Florida beats the Oilers 5-1, right? They allow, the Edmonton loses to the two Florida teams by a combined score of 12-5.
Good point.
The goaltending woes seem to be back there, which is lovely. But perfect scenario for the Canucks, right? The road team's coming through, Canucks beat them, the Oilers don't. That's a great place to be.
Yes. Edmonton, prior to those two losses, is that where they'd won 8 straight?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're 2-game losing streak. Yeah, they're 8-2. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. What a difference. And as good as Edmonton played, and it's nice to see that we're still 17 points up. They have 4 games in hand, but 17 points up, that's good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, but even if, let's say they win 3 of those 4, right? Then they have 33 points. They're still 11 back. Canucks have built themselves a nice edge here, especially with, the next two games, which are these weird Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at noon. And I said it last week, and I said, wow, it'll be nice to watch my team win on a Sunday for once, and like a Sunday afternoon. And then thanks to the Seahawks, I actually get to see my team win on a Monday night as well.
Yeah.
So just a very good weekend, except for this Minnesota game, because we could not have picked a worse game to have the four of us all together to do a Christmas episode of Game Over Vancouver.
It's disappointing.
Than this game against the Minnesota Wild, where absolutely nothing happened for about 65 minutes of hockey, and then there was a shootout goal. I know we've spent 30 minutes on the first two games. This one will not take long, I promise.
Parker, you know what's funny? I'm not sure if you ever go back and look at the Game Over comments just to see. I do that for all our shows, not just the one I'm in. I just want to make sure that we're all doing well and we're supporting each other. So we had 3 comments left on our video after we did it, and they're all saying that we were just bitter Canucks fans, that we called the Minnesota Wild boring only because we lost them, that we played right in the hands. No, I'm saying this. I'm declaring this so right now.
Boring.
Both can be true. We can admit that the Canucks lost that game because they did. That's objectively true.
Yes.
So the Canucks lost. But yes, we can also say that Minnesota Wild are a very boring team. Those two things can be true together.
Right. You don't see me saying that about the 6-5 loss to the Devils 2 weeks ago.
Of course.
Right? No, because that was, you know, the Devils are good, it's and fun to watch.
Yeah.
Even when my team loses in very frustrating fashion. Like, look, a 2-1 loss on the road at 11 a.m. and getting a point out of it, that's a totally fine scenario for the Canucks. Overtime losses, like, they're not great, but if they're out of division, who cares, right? It's a point. It helps. Yep. You know, it really doesn't, you know, a loss, you lose some points percentage. An overtime loss, you don't lose much. But my goodness, this game was an absolute snoozer. You cannot say that we are bitter Canucks fans after watching that overtime. 3-on-3 NHL overtime, which is supposed to be the pinnacle of the sport, the most highly skilled, back and forth, fast-paced, you know, end-to-end rushes for 5 minutes, and someone must score because there's so much action and offense. And then to go watch that, because I've seen this Canucks team play overtimes, and they're fairly interesting sometimes, at the very least, right? Yeah. That Islanders game, Quinn Hughes scores. Last year, there were some good overtimes, right? The Canucks have the players and the talent and the, you know, the will to have an interesting overtime game. This was the worst 5-on-5 overtime I have ever, or sorry, 3-on-3 5-minute overtime that I've ever seen in my life. And the Minnesota Wild, who are historically a pretty boring team, happen to be involved. So maybe I'm biased because I've always thought of Minnesota as boring, but they did not do much to quell that in this game.
Yeah, Darth and Teller agrees with you. That was the most brutal 3-on-3 I've watched in years. Awful. So here's the thing. There were, about a month ago, they were talking about some potential rule changes, and one of them was to institute almost like a half-court rule, as in basketball. Once you pass half-court, you can't go back, i.e. over and back. And some people liked it. Others said, no, then it's going to be too easy to defend or too easy to cook, whatever. Parker, I almost threw my remote control through my TV. That wouldn't help anyone. I almost wish there was the half court rule for the Minnesota Wild on Saturday morning.
It's funny. The NFL does a lot of like, sort of overreactionary rule changes, like one game will, like, something weird will happen in one game. Like, I think it was like Saints Rams a few, like 5, 6, 7 years ago, where there was a missed pass interference. Like, all right, we're reviewing pass interference now, right? Like, just from that one thing. And then you have the Eagles, who do this, you know, this tush push, brotherly shove, whatever you want to call it. And they pick up 2 yards every single time. And they're like, we got to ban this because no one can stop it. And it's like, well, no other team can do it. That's not a problem. And so I look at this and I was thinking of this sort of the same thing. Like, as some teams that, you know, it's a possession based thing and it's kind of skilled. I am very willing to overreact from this one game. You institute everything, you know, no over and back, you know, you can't go back past center, whatever it is. Take off sides away too while we're at it in overtime. Let's make it real fun. Elias Pettersson was the one who said, like, yeah, just be better, I think. was the quote. Yeah. But man, that was miserable to watch. The 3-on-3 was designed to be this fun end-to-end action that someone's going to win it in 5 minutes, because we don't want to watch a shootout, right? It's such a miserable way to lose, and winning doesn't feel that good anyways. So on board with instituting something to prevent overtimes like that, because that was just felt like a waste of time.
Yeah. And for the one or two Minnesota Wild fans that are in here, Parker and I would be saying the exact same thing if we had won the game. This has nothing to do with the fact that the Canucks lost that extra point. This has everything to do with the fact with Minnesota won the draw. They took it over our line and they circled amongst themselves for a whole minute in the zone. Then they took it out of the zone and circled one another.
The thing. So I take, like, because I knew that I would sort of be like leading game over during that show, right? I would sort of be emceeing it. And I'm like, hey, well, I'm going to take notes during the game and sort of take us through everything. And because I do like my own post-game videos or stuff on game over, and I like to spend 15, 20 minutes breaking down the game. So I have lots of notes. My notes in overtime were something like, Minnesota won the faceoff and held the puck for a minute. The Canucks stole the puck and held the puck for 90 seconds. Minnesota got the puck back and skated around for 2.5 minutes. The Canucks got one shot from the outside. And like, that was all my notes for the entire, for the entire overtime. Painful. Like, you know, it's how many shots there's on average in the NHL, about one shot per minute, right? 30 shots a team over 60 minutes. Yeah. There should be a lot more than that if there's only six guys on the ice.
Oh yeah.
Not two shots over 5 minutes. There should be like 15 to 20. So yeah, that was just miserable.
It's funny. We said we wouldn't spend any time talking about this game, and we've ranted for 5 minutes on overtime.
And if that's all we talk about, that's fine.
Yep.
Let's go over quickly. The Wild did score late in the first period. This was just a really nice play. Kind of exactly like, or very similar to the goal that Tampa Bay scored a few nights prior, where it's just two cross crease passes, guy in front tips it over over to Smith to make it 1-0. Very nice play. Defense, you know, really should have done better there. And I think this is the one that we were sort of blaming on Hronek, if I remember correctly, because he sort of lost his guy, but everyone played it pretty poorly.
I have nothing to add.
Second period starts, and the third line does some more outstanding stuff, and it's really the only thing that I care about talking about in this game. That's Garland, really nice pass forward after the end line to Joshua, and he finds Bluger in front. Very similar goal to what Minnesota scored in the first period, where he chips it over to tie it at one. And you know, not much else happened the rest of the game. Genuinely, third period was pretty slow. You know, shots won't tell you it. Shots say 12-8 in the third in favor of Vancouver, and you might think it was like, oh, back and forth, a little bit interesting. Last 2 minutes were kind of interesting. Goligoski almost scored in tight with like 10 seconds left. But other than that, there was nothing. Yeah. And then Zuccarello scored in the shootout, and the Canucks had three abysmal shootout attempts, and that was the game.
Okay, so forget about hindsight. Let's say tomorrow, Parker, the Canucks go to the shootout against Nashville, okay? Let's say neither Brock or Kuzmenko have scored during the game, so you're not even riding the hot hand. Let's presume that Miller and Petey are among your shooters. So basically, I'm trying to get you to say, are you putting Brock in the shootout or are you putting Kuzmenko in the shootout? There's stats, there's history. I get all that too.
Yeah, I think because Kuzmenko didn't score in the last one, they would do Brock in the next one.
Right.
But I don't know. I feel like teams sort of, you know, they practice the shootout. They know who their best shooters are and they base it off that. I think if a guy scores two goals in a game or like looked fantastic, then maybe he gets a look. But yeah, I think other than that, they sort of have a set lineup.
Okay. So no big deal, Kuzmenko. And Kuzmenko had been 4 of 7. Now he's still 4 of 8. That's still pretty good. 50% in his career. So no qualms there. We're just talking about it. Or I'm just bringing it up because I guess he didn't score. That's why.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair.
All right. And then we go to noon yesterday, Sunday at 12, which is football time, but not for the Vancouver Canucks. I'm trying to, I don't remember a lot of this game. It was so early. but Chicago does open the scoring about 10 minutes in, which has been a bit of a trend lately for the Canucks. They've been allowing some first goals, but good on them for coming back. This is Filip Hronek. At fault again, loses the battle behind the net. You know, just gets checked, falls down, loses the puck, doesn't break up the pass across. Quinn Hughes doesn't pick up Foligno in the crease, and he chips it past, you know, just sort of tips it past Demko about 10 minutes into the period to make it 1-0.
Yeah, we're hearing a little bit more about the shine has slowly coming off. I'm not complaining, but the shine is slowly coming off that Hughes and Hronek pairing. Both on offense, which is fine, and then on defense a little bit, and not just Hronek, Hughes slipping a little bit too. So I'm not panicking, but I wouldn't be surprised if Hronek gets to anchor his own pair, maybe coming out of Christmas or something, just for a different look.
Yeah, and I'm also, that brings up a little bit of concern for the future, right? Like this this contract that Filip Hronek's going to get. Like,
good point.
I might want to see him hold a lineup on his own for a little bit before we shell out a ton of money.
That's a great point.
Like, especially with the points that he's putting up, right? Like that's big money level of points. Yep. But how much of that's coming from Quinn Hughes?
Yep.
So 1-0, Canucks do get it back late in the period. They get another 2 minute advantage, which is nice. They just don't score in time. But a really nice, I think it was a 5-on-2 essentially, cause one guy got hurt I think Connor Murphy blocked a shot and was essentially out of the play. So he didn't put essentially any pressure on JT Miller, who fired it across to Pettersson, and he just rips it past and makes it 1-1.
Yeah, Petey was pretty quiet heading into this game. I think a couple scoreless games, but that was nice. That was nice. And you're right. Just as the first one expired, so then the second one expired too. So at least they got a power play goal.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So we go to... So shots in the first were 13-6 in favor of Chicago, but the analytics show it is basically a dead heat in that period. Mm-hmm. So we go to the second, which is the Canucks period, and Nick Foligno scores again. Slow start to the period. I mean, Chicago had the power play coming in, and it's essentially just, what was this play? Just sort of a tip play in front, like a low pass sort of on net, and Foligno bangs home the rebound.
That's right. Bedard took the shot in, and then Cole was left to basically choose to be between a couple guys, and left Foligno kind of open.
Canucks didn't sit on that for long, though. And again, guess who? But this third line, and it's essentially they good play on the zone entry. Garland steals the puck, brings it in, curls away, gets some space. Waits and just throws it on net and right at Joshua's stick. Like, it's obviously going well wide, but it's a slap pass essentially to Dakota Joshua, and he tips it 5-hole.
Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful.
Very, very great play to make it 2-2.
Yeah, this Joshua. I'll just say it now. So there's a couple articles about this third line, but they call it the Garland line, and there's some discourse of whether I think it was Riff Rawl says you always call it the center's line. He's being center, right? So it's the Blueger line. It's not the Joshua line, nor is it the Garland line.
Right. And there was a lot of people who were like, okay, you're gonna call the West Coast Express the Brendan Morrison line.
Yeah,
like,
yes.
Really?
Yes.
No. Yes. That was I don't think that's truly the case. And then the Canucks piled on. This game where they were sort of on their heels, like a slow start once again, and they hadn't had a lead, and they score one, and they just like, oh, we'll get one more. And this is essentially a 2-on-1. Hoglander's driving the net, and Brock Besser just decides that, for what I've said of he's not even firing great shots. He's just, being in the right spot and burying pucks. He just goes in, rips it. Absolute rocket of a wrister under the glove, Mrazek. And the Canucks have the lead back just 41 seconds after that Joshua goal.
Yeah, that was outstanding. I think I went to the washroom during the Joshua goal or something. So I was watching the Joshua goal replay, and then I saw that Besser scored. By the way, did you see this? Pass it to Bulis, the good job boys line, because Garland, Joshua. Yeah. And then we got the thirst line, which I don't think I want to touch.
I like that one a little bit. That's fun. Yeah,
it's okay.
And then, you have Wyatt Arndt pushing hard for Connor Garland to be called like Corolla Garland because he's just reliable. And it's just, they're really trying. Someone's really trying to hit the next lotto line.
Yeah that's weak.
And it's, and everyone's whiffing right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Second period continues. Canucks again being essentially dominant for the second period. And they add one more for good measure. This one is Ilya Mikheyev. I'm trying to find the play here. This is a puck that goes back to the point, shot from, I think, Myers, just a rocket from the point. Ilya Mikheyev tips it in, reached out for it, got a piece of it. And, it's his 10th of the year already. And it's 4-2.
Yeah, 10 goals in 20, because he missed two or three at the start. So he's having a nice little 25 on pace season. That's really good for Mikheyev. I think he's been really good. I really do.
Yeah, 30 goal pace. You cannot complain about that at all. So that was nice. And then third period, you get a guy who I guarantee you've never heard of before. what is his full name? Cole Gutman.
Gutman.
He has played 27 career games, 6 goals. Good for him. Chicago has a power play as the Canucks go into their bend don't break mode. This is just sort of a broken play on the zone entry. He loses the puck right to his teammate, Connor Bedard, loses the puck right to Gutman. And he takes a good shot and beats Demko to make it 4-3. And then the Canucks continue to sit on their heels and won the game.
What'd you think of Bedard overall?
he's good.
Yeah.
Like, just, he's always scary whenever I see him out there. Like, he, the puck's not going in for him right now. He's missing the net a little bit, but he's like one minor adjustment away probably from just lighting it up. Like, every time he's got the puck, he's not afraid to shoot it. His release is stupid. Like, every, like, it, from anywhere, he just moves the puck and he's, and his, and the puck's off of his stick. So he's, sure, he's not putting up a ton of numbers right now. I mean, he's got 14 assists already, this year, which is pretty good. He's got 9 goals, I think. 12 goals. So he's almost a point a game, right? He's got 12 goals. I think he's got 9 more points than anyone else on his team, right? Imagine him on a decent team. Yeah, he'd be tearing it up.
Yeah. I remember a couple of times in the first period, especially because I was teaching my daughter about, as we were watching about Connor Garland and Connor Bedard. And I think the shot I showed her, what he got blocked or got deflected. It was from the slot, I think, because there's a lot of traffic, but it's even she doesn't know much about hockey. She couldn't believe how fast the puck got off his stick. It
doesn't make sense.
Yeah. It's nuts.
So that's the games. We both predicted 3-1 for the week.
Yeah.
And I think we both predicted that the Lightning was sort of the iffy one. That one or Florida. But the way the schedule was set up, take 3-0-1. That's 7 points out of a possible 8. They've got 11 of the last 12 possible points. This team started out so hot. They had a little bit of a lull where they just went 500 for a little bit. Now they're winning constantly again. It is an absolute blast to watch these guys play. And they've got 3 more games coming up this week before the Christmas break.
Yeah.
2 on the road starting tomorrow in Nashville.
Going to be very interested to see the Canucks start, because as well documented, the 2 weekend games. So at least this is a more normal time, 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Central. Yeah, we beat Nashville, right? When they were in, it was a Halloween game. We won that one, I think.
That was Halloween, 5-2 Vancouver. And then the week before that, the Canucks beat them 3-2.
So we beat them twice already.
A week apart.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the Preds are hot right now. They've won 4 straight. They've won 7 of their last 8. Just 1 loss to the Maple Leafs. But they beat the Capitals, they beat the Hurricanes, they beat the Flyers and the Habs in the last week or so. Wow. They lost the Maple Leafs the game before that, but they had before that beat the Lightning and the Blackhawks and the Sabres. So not like crazy great competition, but winning the games you have in front of you is all you can do. So they've been hot.
Okay. No, I she didn't know they'd been that good. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. 5 games over .500. I'm regardless win or lose. I am interested to see how the Canucks start. I'm also interested to see if Pia Suter gets another shot with Petey and Mikheyev, or if they drop him down. Because I'm not sure you heard it after the game. Rick Tocchet would just say, he was okay. He was okay. It's tough being a center and then moving to the wing. He was just okay. So Tocchet didn't seem overly impressed with it.
That's fair. Yeah. Canucks are very slight underdogs coming into this one. It's essentially a toss up per the odds makers. So should be a good one. And I'm going to miss it because someone scheduled a hockey game for 6:15 tomorrow, which is the worst possible time.
You can see any of it.
Nope, none of it.
Okay.
I'll get to watch the first period.
I'll tell you what.
Maybe I'll bring my phone on the bench. That's a good idea.
Good. Yeah, I got game over tomorrow, so I got to pay sort of attention. Yeah.
Fair enough. Canucks then get the Dallas Stars, who are... They're 5-3-2 in their last 10, so they're doing what they need to do. They're still top of the division, 40 points in 30 games. So worse than the Canucks, which is just weird. Like, it's weird to think about, like, the best team in the Central right now has a worse points percentage than the Canucks do.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. So they recently, they're coming off, they beat the Kraken tonight. They don't play until Thursday, so they get a couple days of rest, and they're at home. They beat the Kraken in OT. The Kraken tied that one up late. And then they just lost to the Blues on Saturday, also in OT. But before that, they had beat the Red Wings and the Sens, but lost before that to the Golden Knights pretty handily. So they've been sort of middling lately, a little bit worse than their record would suggest. But it's in Dallas, and it won't be an easy one.
Yeah, and we beat Dallas 2-0 the first weekend in November. That was the game that none of the four of us could do game over. So we had Avery do it for us from Edmonton. I didn't know, actually, Justin said this. I didn't know this, that Ottinger was hurt. So I guess we're going to be robbed of another battle of the young American goaltenders of Demko and Ottinger. Well, thanks, Justin. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that could be a big edge for Vancouver. Yeah, and then to finish off right before Christmas, Saturday night, 7 p.m. This is the one that I'm doing game over for.
Yes.
And that is, hopefully it's a win because it's the Sharks. San Jose on Saturday at 7 o'clock. Sharks are coming alive a little bit. They've won 5 of their last 10. Mm-hmm. They got shelled by the Avs yesterday, and they got shut up by the Coyotes a couple days before that. But they did recently beat the Jets and the Red Wings and the Islanders and the Devils. So they've been pretty decent lately, but we know the Canucks are. Are they 3-0 against them this year?
2-1. San Jose beat us. 2-1. San Jose beat us.
Oh, yeah, the 25th. Yeah, I missed that one. So the Canucks won 10-1, 3-1, and then lost 4-3. So that one should be a win, but again, you never know. Teams should be leaving it all out there, though, with the Christmas break.
Sure.
Coming up, which I think should be an edge for the Canucks, I would hope.
So it's funny. Before I knew about the Ottinger news, I was going to say 2-1. A pretty safe bet, right? 2-1. I'm still going to say 2-1, and maybe the Canucks somehow, they win the Dallas one, but they, for whatever reason, lose one of the Nastro San Jose. Because I don't know. I would love them to go 3-0, but I'm going to say 2-1.
I'm going to go 2-0-1.
Ah, nice. Nice.
Because I'm sure they find a way to lose one in OT or a shootout that'll be very boring again. So hopefully, 2-0-1 would be totally fine. 3-0 would be fantastic. 2-1 would be just okay. What high expectations we now have.
Exactly. It's crazy. This team. By the way, Parker, I mentioned this on my stream last night. You know how the Canucks have played 32 games and many teams have had, but then we're always looking at the Kings because we want to know truly where we are against them, and they're 5 games fewer than us. It seems like for the life of me, I can't remember a time where it's the Canucks looking up at a team and saying, we have 4 or 5 games in hand. It always seems like the Canucks are the team that has played the most games. Or am I going crazy?
It does sound right to me. Yeah, the Canucks put such a weird, the schedule is so weird this year that, Seattle's played 33 games and LA's played 27. It's such a Ottawa's played 26 games this year.
Yeah, 7 game difference. That's
that's bizarre. That's two whole weeks of the season.
Yep.
But I that's great for the Canucks though, right? Because all that means is it's more gaps going ahead, right?
Yep.
They're gonna play 35 games before Christmas. It means they only have 47 games to go for all of January, February, March, and then half of April. Essentially, right? We're only 3 months into the season at this point.
Right. Whereas another team like LA will have to play 52 games instead of 47. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Right. Yep. So I think that might give them a bit of an edge, just rest's sake, right? For how cramped the Canucks schedule had been for that good stretch and for them to come out of it how they are, right? To have, 44 points in 32 games. I think that is an edge. Who starts the 3 games?
Ah, good question.
Demko coming off of being the NHL's second star of the week, .957 save percentage in his 3 wins this week.
Yeah.
You gotta think they want to give to Smith a game before the holidays, but. Yeah. But.
And does it matter? Let's say they do give DeSmith one of the 3, Parker. Does that matter if it's the home game, if it's the last game? Because if it were me, I'd play Demko the next 2, both on the road. You got a day in between. And then I played DeSmith on the Saturday at home. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Demko's schedule, right? He played, he played obviously Thursday, and then he didn't play. He had 2 days off, or I guess an extra half day off because he played at noon on Sunday.
Yeah.
But then, that's an extra half day kind of as well, or it's an extra few hours of rest as well, right? An extra 5 hours or so because the game tomorrow's at 5.
Yeah.
As their time zone, even though they're staying in the same time zone, kind of gets a little bit nicer because they would have arrived in Nashville by 5 o'clock yesterday and had a full couple of days of rest. So really no reason why Demko shouldn't be able to go all 3. And the way he's been playing, wouldn't it be nice to go 3-0 going into the holidays? I would say just ride them. And sure, that's a big gap for DeSmith, especially when you look at after the holidays, where the Canucks play Thursday, December 28th, and then have 4 full days off and don't play again till the 2nd. Yeah. So maybe you give DeSmith the game on the 28th, and then Demko gets a full 2 weeks of rest. DeSmith gets a full 2 weeks of rest before. I don't know. It's tricky, but I just want to see. I don't feel like Demko's been playing a ton, right? He's been playing a good amount, but I don't think he's been playing an egregious number of games that he needs to get rest.
How about this? You play Demko Tuesday and Thursday on the road.
Yeah.
The conceivably tougher games. Then you give DeSmith 23 and 28, and Demko gets the 2 weeks between the 21st and the 2nd. Oh, oh, oh.
Yeah, you could. You absolutely could. And there's... I don't know. That'll be all up to Ian Clark. Looking at this. I'm looking at that Stars game. Because looking at the schedule, they play 3 games. DeSmith should get the middle one. That makes the most sense. That's not the game I want him in.
Nope. I agree.
That's the hardest game of the 3. That's the game that Demko should have the start for sure. So,
and we're not talking about Demko to Martin or Demko to Delia drop off. We get that, you guys, but there's still a bit of a drop off as good as DeSmith has been. The numbers are almost identical, but you got to look at who they've played and how they played. So yes, there's obviously there's a reason why one's a starter and making $5 million and one guy's a backup making 1.8. That's why.
Demko's got a 921. DeSmith has a 923. I mean, save percentage wise, they're identical, right?
Okay.
However, I don't know. There's something about that presence that Demko has.
I agree.
He plays such a calm style, and I think the team builds off that a little bit.
Have you noticed the way Demko swallows up pucks? Like every time the puck, he just kind of hulks it. It's pretty cool, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a very well controlled goaltender.
Well controlled.
I'm fine with, really, it's not much of a drop off, but I like watching Demko play.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, so I got 2-1. You got 2-0-1.
Absolutely. Was there any other Canucks news this week? Not really, hey?
No.
Anything happened? There was the Chychek trade, if that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, that's right.
Chychek, So Stanika for Chychek and a 6th.
Fifth.
Canucks 5th. Yeah. Was it a?
Maybe 6th.
I think it was a 6th.
Okay, 6-6-6. Yeah.
But either way, Canucks add a pick. They had no organizational depth defensively because they had a couple injuries. And Jack Stanika was, sort of an extra guy. So they ship him off to San Jose. He'll get playing time there, which is excellent for him. And the Canucks add a defensive piece and a pick.
Yeah.
As Patrick Alvin just continues to just make clean, easy, nice moves.
Yeah. No harm, no foul. That's a good trade because you're going to likely use that. You're right. It was a 6th-round pick. You're going to use that somewhere, some way as an asset. And if you're going to the game this Saturday, I'm not. But if you're going to the game, you will see Jack Stanika returning to Rogers Arena Ice in the blue and teal, or the white and teal.
No, revenge game. Oh, no. He's going to score 4. I was so worried Bevilia was going to score yesterday.
Oh, him and Zadorov
had a couple chances.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. Nothing to do with each other, but it's just kind of funny.
But they were traded kind of for each other, just indirectly.
Right. Yes. Indirectly.
Yes. Should we take a couple questions here?
Sure.
All right. I guess we should have asked for questions ahead of time. But Spartan did bring up earlier. I don't know. We'd bring up his $5 donation.
No, let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah. Said somebody, please teach the Canucks to count. We have to be breaking too many men records at this point. We talked about this on Game Over Vancouver. Actually, Toronto has the lead in too many men. I think they've had 7 this year, while the Canucks have had 5. So the Canucks are barely not the worst at that. But yeah, the too many men's. It's been too long. Too many years of it. It's got to stop.
I agree. Peter says this, and we kind of touched on this. Thoughts on the Hughes and Hronek, although they've been really good offensively, a defensive concern, especially Hronek with mistakes. What do you think? Okay, so period. What do you think? Will you give up a first for Pesci or Tanev?
I'm tentative to give up a first because I don't think this team is... I mean, they're doing everything they can to show that they're a contender, right?
Yeah.
However, it's 1 year. There's probably is this team going to be this good next year? Maybe, but there's a real chance at regression. Is this really the year you want to be? You want to be spending a lot of your assets when this team doesn't have a lot of, you know, depth coming up the pipeline to begin with. But this team's definitely earned a move, right? I mean, they've earned the Zadorov trade, and if they continue towards the trade deadline, they'll earn more. I don't think anything has to be done anytime soon, though. Again, this team has built themselves a pretty comfortable spot. Do we trust Hronek long-term as a partner for Quinn Hughes? I mean, he's absolutely the best partner Hughes has ever had, but he's been a bit shaky defensively this year. But maybe, you know, more time training under, you know, Gonchar and Foot, maybe that helps him a little bit. Maybe it's a little bit wishful thinking, but I would like to see Hronek carry his own line a little bit before, you know, we pay him $60 million or whatever it's going to be.
Do you believe in this Brett Pesce hype? I don't know a lot about him, so I'm not saying he's not good. I just don't know a lot about him.
Brett Pesce's good. I didn't know if there was any rumors surrounding him, though.
No, I think people just like him. Yeah.
Oh, that's fair. He is a UFA after this year, right? So it would be a pure rental, most likely. But he's been very good in Carolina. And he probably would get a good, I mean, he makes four right now. He'd probably makes 5.5, maybe.
Sure.
But yeah.
I like this one from Ricky. Agree or disagree? Canucks have a 3-year window to win the cup with Demko and Miller in their prime.
It's tough, right? That, I mean, in reality, teams' windows usually are pretty short. You know, you get a few years. And the JT Miller deal is a pretty big set of handcuffs if he starts not being good, right? Which we can expect in years 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe that contract, or 5, 6, 7 or whatever. And then of course Pettersson's going to get a good raise, but they're also getting rid of a couple of anchors, right? Yeah. I mean, that Myers contract goes away, so that'll be nice. The Connor Garland contract they might get out of if he starts playing worse, who knows. This management group has shown some flexibility and some maneuverability. If Demko falls out of it, like once Demko falls off a little bit, the thing is he's 28, right? Really good goalies last quite a while. Right. I don't know if he's a Hall of Fame caliber goalie yet. I mean, he would need a good like 8 more years of 9-15 goaltending to even get in that conversation. But guys of that caliber, if he does get there, they can play till they're 35, 36. And they can win championships at that age as well. So I wouldn't be too concerned about Demko yet. I'd say he's got another good, even 5 years or so. And they've got some, you know, goaltending prospects. You can always pick up a goalie in free agency. Like there's ways around your goalie sort of running out of time. JT Miller's an interesting one though. But again, really good players.
Sure.
Like the best of best players don't fall off as hard. Although I don't know if JT Miller is sort of in that caliber. I could definitely see JT Miller falling off, but I would say 4 to 5 years is sort of their window right now. And the fact that it's starting now is great. None of us, I think, expected it. You know, we expect them to sneak into the playoffs this year, the way they're playing. They've shown that they can absolutely be, you know, a second round, maybe even third round team. But yeah, I don't know if it's an interesting one. It's a great question.
Yeah, and I like Ricky's question. I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but I think one part you're right is you identify the on ice part, but then when you bring in contracts, Demko after the season 2 more years at $5 million, excellent. Hughes 3 more years after this is 7.8. That's a steal. Miller here forever, fine. But then it's OEL's cap, it goes up to $4 million 2 seasons from now. So there's that. What's Pettersson and Hronek? So not only are we talking about how are these guys going to perform on the ice, but how do you manipulate your salary cap situation so you still have room to sign other depth guys that we've seen are so important this year? So I think it's a great question. And I do think that this year, as we've talked about, Parker, I think it's sped up expectations by a year or two. No one expected them to be 12 games over 500 on December 19th. So dude, would you blame them if they kind of went all in this year? No. If they're fighting for first in the Pacific on March 2nd, of course you're going to try and go for it this year.
Right. Yeah. And man, what a run that, what fun that would be.
Oh, it'd be crazy.
Yeah. That's the thing, right? You can say like, oh, the, you know, is the core going to expire? Right. And
yeah.
I mean, thing is JT Miller is a critical piece of it, but he's just one piece, right? The rest of the core, you know, Pedersen's 25, Besser's 26, Kuzmenko's even 27 if he steps it back up, right?
Yep.
Quinn Hughes is what, 24? Hronek's 26, right? Like there's, if Miller falls off, it would suck, but he's only a portion of the team, right? The rest of the core likely won't at that same time. And you look at how much turnover is there going to be in the next 2 years?
Yeah.
Right? Like, is Teddy Bluger going to be here? Is Pugh Suter going to be here? Sam Lafferty going to be here? Is Nils Hoglander going to be here? Is Dakota Joshua going to be here? You know, is Nikita Zadorov going to be here? Ian Cole? Probably not. Mark Friedman? Probably not. Noah Juulsen? Right? Like, all these names. Casey DeSmith is your backup.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to get paid more than 1.8 next year if he keeps this up, right? So,
you know what? I think we're only going to have a team of Demko, Hughes, Hronek, PD, Miller, and Besser. That's our team.
And that's all you need. But yeah, very good question. And a good conversation piece that we can get more into, especially as we get towards the offseason. Mm-hmm. But man, it's a weird thing to be thinking about that this team could be likely will be buyers at the deadline. And yeah, I'm so tentative to like actually make, like say like, oh, we should make these moves because this team doesn't have any playoff experience, right? And no team usually gets there in their first go, barring Vegas, right? Yeah. But man, if look where they're at right now, they're 3 points behind Vegas, same amount of wins, three fewer overtime losses, right? That's it.
Yep. Mark my words, Parker, our trade deadline show is going to be the biggest show of the year.
Yeah.
Because people are just going to be loving it or going to be flipping mad.
I don't know how I'm going to react, right? Like if the Canucks are trading, you know, a couple of firsts for a big name, I'll look at it like, man, no, you can't do that. But is that just me being conditioned from all of my years of them spending draft picks when they shouldn't, right? Well, if you're first or second in the Pacific, well, what better time do you have to do it?
Yep.
And at that point, I'm going to strap in and I'm going to start saving money for some playoff tickets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know a guy. We'll chat. Awesome.
Well, that's a great place to wrap up.
Yeah.
Folks, thank you all very much for joining. 200 of you in here. Let's get those likes up. Make sure you're subscribed. If you're not already, we're here every Monday night, I guess, except next Monday it's Christmas. So we'll probably take a week off.
And so here's the thing. The next Monday after that is New Year's, but maybe that's not as crazy.
Yeah, it is New Year's night. Although I do have to watch the Huskies. They're playing college football.
Stay tuned, folks. Maybe we bump to a Tuesday for 1 week. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. But make sure you're definitely not having and hit the notification bell and you'll find out. And if you want extra notice, you can follow Clay on Twitter at Canuck Clay this way. Canuck Clay on Twitter and on YouTube. You find me, Parker's Pucks, Twitter and YouTube, X, YouTube, whatever. If you missed any part of the show, you can rewind back to the beginning here on YouTube, or you can find it on your favorite podcast platform in a matter of 15 to 20 minutes. Listen to it on your way to the office in the morning. Otherwise, Clay, any parting words this Monday evening?
Well, I think on behalf of both of us, we want to thank all of you for sticking with us, especially around Christmas time. You always feel a bit more grateful and you count the blessings in your life. So I know Parker does his videos and you guys are there. You guys come to my streams, which I appreciate, but we won't see you collectively until at least a week and a half from here. So we wish you the safest of holidays and we are grateful for your support here. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you all for being here. Have a very happy holiday and we will see you next time. Good night.